a grateful alcoholic. My name is George.
George.
My sobriety date is January 19th of 1994. By God's grace, great sponsorship, and a lot of people in rooms like this, I slammed that first white chip. That doesn't make me special. May not impress you, but it sure as hell impressed the hell out of me. And that's taking my inventory. And I had a lot of problems in here because I know that the book tells us that 50% of the people that walk in here get the recovery on the first shot. And then the out of those 50%, 25% get it on the second shot. That makes 75% of the people recover. And then it says the rest show remarkable progress, as they keep calling this program. This week I've been dealing with a lot of people that have been relapsing, and two people I know that died as a direct result of this disease. They forgot their first step, is what it's about to me. If you forget the first step, you pick up a drink. Do the steps in reverse, you pick up a drink. You know, there's all different things that I heard when I got here. How do I get to the 10th step and take inventory? I took everybody's inventory when I came in here. I don't know about anybody else. I mean, I thought about you, I kind of told you when I got here because I didn't know any better. I didn't know anything about restraint or practicing spiritual principles because I wasn't very spiritual when I got here. You know, I've been going through the... I really don't want to do this tonight. I was talking about it earlier. I'm not in a good space. There's a part in the 10th step that talks about emotional sobriety. Mm-hmm. And that's the next frontier. I'm not ready for that frontier thing. But I know God has got me here for a reason, and I show up because that's what I was taught to do. I physically don't feel good, and I haven't talked about that in this room yet, about my physical inventory, but I probably will tonight because I'm really struggling with a lot of things physically right now. And it's not the first time I've been down this road. You know, I'm grateful for the traditions because this is the unity thing that I have so much trouble with. And the 10th step gets me closer to you. So let's go through the first nine real quickly. I got here because I can't drink safely. I don't know where a drink will take me. That's all I need to know about the first step. I came in on the unmanageable part of it. I lived under a bridge. I came out of a cardboard box. I spent my last Christmas cutting a hole in it, throwing on Christmas lights, hoping to die. And 5 blocks away from me was Rockefeller Center, and I wouldn't even go over and look at the Christmas tree. I had a lot of powers greater than myself in that second step. I always talk about the 6 tradition, money, property, and prestige. That has always diverted me from where I'm supposed to be in life. They still do. I have to be real careful with what I make my higher powers today. I didn't believe in God when I got here. I talk about the way my grandfather died. I talk about the way my dad died, the way I behaved, and my relationship with God was non-existent. Married out of religion, all the nonsense that I ran through, and all the warped perceptions I had about life, there was no relationship and no room for God when I got here. I didn't have a moral inventory, so I didn't need to do that step. I don't know about you guys. I wasn't moral. I robbed, I stealed, I cheated, I manipulated. I did everything that I was not taught to do growing up. And those things kept me blocked from where I'm supposed to be. I wasn't going to admit to you the stuff I did because some of them I'm not proud of. Some of them I still have regrets of. I carry remorse, guilt, and shame. I come in here very confused about who I am, so I wasn't putting that on paper because you guys wouldn't like me. If I wouldn't put it on paper and I wouldn't share it with you, I wasn't going to do a fifth step. And I believe the fifth step is done for 3 reasons today. I didn't believe that when I came in here. I knew I wasn't going to tell anybody what I did. I did not want you to know my deepest, darkest secrets. And I had a wonderful man that was my sponsor, and his name was Bob Welsh, who actually carried the message to me before my other sponsor, Larry S., carried the solution to me, and before so many other people walked in my life and helped me along this journey. You know, and I sat down with that man, and I told all my deep, dirty secrets, the abuse, the abandonment, the stuff that was real, the stuff that wasn't real. And then they told me I had a whole bunch of character defects that I didn't see, so they let me know what they were in the 6th step. And I started looking at them. And, you know, I had all this stuff going on that didn't make me feel good about me. I wasn't comfortable in my own skin. I mean, I was less comfortable around you. Isolation is one of my favorite things when I'm not feeling good. I get to that 7th step, and they tell me to start doing what's right for me. So 6 and 7 is about humility and humiliation and all kinds of things I didn't understand when I got here. But for me, it's stop doing what's wrong in 6 and start doing what's right for me in 7. What's right for me will get somebody in this room drunk. What's right for them may get me drunk. So I got to be careful. I got to learn that balance in there. 8th step was making the list for my 4th step. And, you know, I had a pretty extensive list when I came in here. 28 pages of a lot of pain and sorrow, a lot of woes, and a lot of victimized and being victimized, and all that stuff that they tell me, if I have victims, don't recover. I love that statement, because I know victims don't recover. I had to stop being a victim in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to stop getting on a pity pot. I had to stop telling everybody where I hurt and why I hurt and why this ain't right and fix me. I can't be fixed. I need God's grace in that, you know. So I did that stuff, and then I got to that eighth step, and I believe that 12 and 12 is what it says, is that defective relationships with other human beings has always been the immediate cause of our woes, including our alcoholism. So you take away the alcoholism, and I still have defective relationships with other human beings. And I had to find out what that common denominator was, and it was really easy, because if I take away all my relationships, the one thing that was in all of them was me. So I know what the common denominator was in the defective, all my relationships. And I had to work on that in nine and get right with my fellow man. You know, and we get to this ninth step, and it talks about a good judgment and a careful sense of timing and prudence. These are the qualities we need when we take the ninth step. And there were the different kinds of amends we talked about, the direct, indirect, living, financial restitution, emotional restitution, just showing up at a meeting and being here, that's a form of amend, buying a newcomer a big book, taking somebody to coffee. It's all different ways we make amends, and amends is a life thing for me. It's living life on life's terms. And it talks about the way we go about doing that in the big book and in the 12 and 12. And then we get to that part that, you know, everybody talks about. It's the ninth step promises. Those are only one set of promises in the big book. There's 12 of them in the ninth step. And then, you know, this halfway through thing, I had some of the promises happen to me when I got here, and some of them didn't happen to me in my ninth step. One of the promises of, you know, I'll not regret the past and wish to shut the door on it. My daughter did not walk in my life till I was 14 years sober. And that was a promise. When they would say that at the end of the meeting, I'd always say, yes, they're extravagant promises. I never thought they would come to me, all of them, or some of them even. So if we're painstaking about this phase of the development, we'll be amazed before we're halfway through. Halfway through with what? Is it halfway through the ninth step, halfway through the program, halfway through my life? I don't get hung up on that anymore. When I came in here, I started getting some of the gifts of the ninth step. The first gift I got of the ninth step is that I could hang around with people and not feel like a piece of garbage. I was starting to come out of that wall I built around myself. The walls were dropping, so some things were starting to happen in here right away. We're going to know a new freedom and new happiness. I didn't feel free my first 2 years of recovery. I would not sit with my back to a window, and just the way it was. And I sure as heck was not going into certain neighborhoods because I was being trouble, more ways than one. And I looked out for people who had names that ended in vowels. So I was, you know, just a little scared when I was here for a while. So I didn't get that new freedom and new happiness for quite a while. I regretted my past, and I shut the door on it for a very long time. I got to that ninth step, and even though I made amends to some people, some were good, like I talked about, and some were bad, I still had a lot of regrets, and, you know, it's just the way I was. I regretted a lot of things I did. And then I started looking at that when I did a 10th step inventory on that, and I want to talk about that a little bit. You know, I looked back, and I realized that a lot of the behaviors I had, I would have had because I didn't have a program. It had nothing to do with drinking. The throwing my kids in the back of a car to go get high, I wouldn't be doing. That's something I wouldn't be doing, go get drunk when I went into a bar. But there's other behaviors, like leaving them in the house alone while I went out shopping or went to the pizza place or went upstairs to the neighbor to go hang out with her for a while. Whatever it was, those behaviors I would have done anyway because I didn't know how to be a parent. Nobody gave me those skills. And I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Those being a parent skill and being accountable and responsible. I didn't know any of that when I got here. So I have a lot of regrets about the things I did. I don't regret them today. Today I found out they were building blocks, because our sixth step says that our defects become our assets. Our past becomes one of our greatest things that we can use. It helps someone else avoid some of the misery we went through. It talks about that the feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. That happened to me about 6 months, because I had a sponsor that kept telling me every day, you're helping a lot of people, come back tomorrow. So what are you talking about? You're helping a lot of people, come back tomorrow. One day I said, Bob, how am I helping all these people? He says, you're teaching them how not to behave. And I was helping a lot of people, because I was so whacked when I got here, and I was so unin touch with what was really going on, that I always teach. There's two kinds of people I believe we meet in Alcoholics Anonymous: people we want to be like and people we don't. It's the only two kinds there are. And I was one of those people I didn't want to be like, but that's who I was. And I didn't know how to change. And that's one of those things. So I stopped regretting my past, you know, and I learned how to use it. And I felt useful to others because very early in my recovery, my sponsor had me sponsor. That's one of these things that I'm not going to get into the controversy. Do you wait a year? Do you wait till you do all your 12 steps? I don't do that. When God puts somebody in front of you, I was told not to say no. And I was 6 months sober and a guy in the halfway house I lived at, because I carried a big book under my arm. Didn't read it, but I carried it. And the guy said to me, will you be my sponsor? And I went to my sponsor. He says, well, you're on your third step. You can take him. He's got to be at least a step behind you. He just celebrated 18 years on the 12th of June. It's not my sponsee anymore. He moved away 2 years ago, so I don't know why it worked for him that way, but I was told that I don't get in God's business. That's a big one for me. So I was useful to somebody else, even though I didn't think I was helping anybody. So there again, there's my view of me taking my inventory of me. We'll get to that a little bit more. I don't lose interest in selfish things. I still like a nice car, a lot of money, pretty girl, a nice house. I still want those things. They're just not my goals in life anymore. My goals kind of shifted to a whole different set of spiritual principles, I would say they are. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. I came to the point where I'm not afraid of being poor anymore. I am still very economically insecure, but I know that God will take care of me. Don't ask me how that worked, but somehow or other, I have not gone without a bed in the almost 19 years I've been here, and I haven't gone without a meal. And that's more than I asked for when I got here, because all I wanted to do when I got here is get my head to slow down and get a full night's sleep. And I've gotten plenty of full night's sleep since I've been here. We intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. I tell the story of getting on the phone when I was having a medical problem, and I remember the first time I was on the other end, and I was dealing with an insurance company, and I didn't yell at the lady at the other end. And I was so excited, I called my sponsor, and he said to me, I guess you're changing. I didn't yell at the lady. I didn't get mad at her because I didn't get what I wanted for the first time. So I learned that these things were happening to me, and I wasn't aware of them. I was the last one to see a lot of this stuff. We suddenly realized that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. It was my 14th anniversary, and the phone rang, and it was my daughter, who I hadn't seen for 3 years prior to coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, and she wanted to know who her father was. And I tell this story because it has a lot to do with the ninth step. She came down to visit me, and when she came down to visit me, one of the things we were discussing was my sponsor had me write a God box and write letters to my children and cards and stuff. And when she came down, I gave her that God box and with all the stuff in it, and she took it home, and her mother got to read some of it, and her brother, who I still don't talk to, that's still a direct result of what I did with him. In his mind, I don't know if that's true. I tried to make the amends, he didn't accept it, and now that's God's business. And I'm okay with that. It still hurts, but I'm okay with it. And, you know, so the ninth step was a really tough step. It's a very tough step. It's the one that scares me more than any other step because I wanted to do it right. And there's only one right way. It's about cleaning my side of the street. It's not what I'm going to get out of it. It's what I'm going to bring to it now. And some of them worked out okay, some of them didn't. I joke about my ex-wife because I don't hear from her until there's a problem. And at the beginning, I used to pray that God make her happy far away from me. And today, if she needs anything, I'll answer the phone and be there for her. That's a change. That's something I couldn't have done, because for a lot of years, I sat in these rooms trying to figure out how I can sneak back to New York and kill her and get back here without anybody knowing. So there's a change that happened within me, and there's a part in our big book that says, God enters in our heart, which is indeed miraculous. He will commence to do for you what you can not do for yourself. And that is true in my case. And I talk about the ninth step a lot before we hit to step 10 for a whole lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is, if you look at, and I'm not going to really review any more of these steps. I've been doing it for the last 10 weeks. And the reason is, if you read step 10, it's really an accumulation of the first nine. And I'm going to go over that with you. And the 10th step, when I got in here, they say you show up, you give up, and you grow up. Steps 1, 2, and 3 is showing up. We call them clean up or give up steps. 4 through 9 is your give up or clean up steps. And 10, 11, and 12 is your maintenance, which I don't like that word. They're grow up steps. It's about entering the world of the Spirit. How did I enter the world of the Spirit? I did 1 through 9. It's real easy. This is not rocket science, guys. So here it says, in our big book, it says, real simply, after the nine-step promises, it goes to this statement. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and can continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living when we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Now, what does that mean? It means that I'm probably more emotionally balanced than I've ever been. Step 2 says we'll be returned to sanity. One of the promises of the 10th step is it says that sanity will be restored. There's a long walk between step 2 and step 10. Just as a long walk between my head and my heart. That's a very long walk. And those steps were very long walks. A lot of stuff happened in that time. Even though it wasn't a long time, and I revisit the steps constantly for that reason, it was a tough time at the beginning. It's different today, much different. I used to say it gets better, then it gets worse, then it gets better, then it gets worse, then all of a sudden it got real, and then it got different again, and then it got worse, and it got better, and then it got really different. And today my life is really different than the guy that walked in. And if that change didn't happen, I would go out and drink again. It's really that simple. Because if the alcoholic that walks in this door doesn't change, then that same alcoholic will take you out to the bar. And I don't want to go to the bar. So I did whatever I was told to do, in spite of how I felt, what I wanted, what I thought. All that stuff that goes on between my ears. I got a disease that centers in my mind. And if I'm going to try and take my inventory by myself, I'm in trouble. Because I will justify the nonsense out of crazy stuff that goes on between these ears. It's a good thing you guys don't spend time up there with me. And it says, we commence this way of living when we cleaned up the past. We've entered the world of the spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. That's step 4, in case anybody doesn't know. When they crop up, we ask God to remove them, 6 and 7. We discuss them with someone immediately, step 5. And we make amends quickly if we harmed anyone, 8 and 9. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code, part of the 12th step right there. So there's a whole bunch of steps right there, right in that part of the end of the 9th step, the beginning of the 10th step. So here's what we're doing. We're taking an inventory. Now, at the beginning, I was about 6 or 7 weeks sober, and I had a sponsor that suggested I a journal. That's how my first inventory. So I would write who I spoke to in the morning, write what meeting I went to, have my little calendar with all the meetings I went to, all 350 of them in 90 days, you know, and who I spoke to, which guys I was hanging out with, who I went for coffee with. And that was my first inventory. It was journaling. And then after that, you know, I was doing steps, and I heard 10 step, and they have the little check worksheet like that. And I used to use that one, and you know, and then I started writing an actual inventory on a daily basis. I still do. Not the same way, though. And in that inventory, I got tired after 3 years of doing the same thing. I was writing every day, and I wasn't getting nowhere. I mean, I was trying to think my way into good acting, and it wasn't working. I was doing the actual action. I was doing the prayer. I was doing everything I was told to do, but there was no change because I really wasn't taking an inventory. I wasn't sharing it with anybody. And a little later on, 11, it's very interesting because the 11th step, which is next week, tells us to go back and do an inventory. It's part of the meditation, is doing a 10-step inventory. So I sat here at 3 years, and I looked at the big book again, and reading the big book, and I was reading the 12 and 12, and I came up with this little inventory sheet. And it's really a simple inventory, and it says real simple. I put a date on it, and it says at night, because it's what the book says. And it says at night, today was I selfish, dishonest, resentful, or afraid? I got little columns on the other side, yes or no. Did I ask God to remove them when they cropped up? Have I harmed anyone? Do I owe an apology? Did I turn my thoughts to someone I can help? Did I practice tolerance, love, patience, and kindliness towards all? Did I carry the vision of God's will into all my activities? Here's one of my favorites. What is God's will for me? When I got here, it was not to drink. But not drinking was not enough. Today, my prayer is real easy in the morning when I say, you know, God, whatever you put in your life, in my life today, let them say what they need to say, let them be who they need to be, and let me accept them for where they are. Because that is your will. Anything other than that is me trying to manipulate God. That's a tough thing for me when that 10th step, I do that. Then comes my favorite one. What could I have done better? I can write chapters on that on a daily basis. And then it says, was I thinking of myself? Was I thinking what I could do for others? Was I thinking what I could pack into the stream of life? Did I drift into worry, remorse, morbid reflection? Did I ask God's forgiveness? One I always forget is, God, I'm not happy with the way I'm feeling. Help me, forgive me if my behavior's wrong. Show me what I need to do. Little simple prayers I was given real early on. Did I inquire of God what corrective measures should be taken? On a daily basis, I have not got this right. Here a little while now, and I haven't gotten 100% on this test yet. But it gives me an opportunity to use it as a measuring stick to see how far my defects have gone or how close I am. So, you know, and I've been speaking a couple of times about the inventory process. There's three inventories, steps in the 12 steps. The first one is the fourth step inventory. That's an inventory about me. All the stuff that I see about me, that I don't like about me, where my defects are hiding, where all this stuff is going on. And then I get to that A-step inventory, which is on my fourth step. It's about you, my relationships with my fellow man. And when I look at that, I get a chance to redouble those efforts that I did in four and see how I can get right with my fellow man and God. And then I get to step 10, which is really quick after 9. And then here I am looking at my relationship with God, the spiritual realm. And that's what the 10th step is about for me. How do I go from my humanity into the spiritual world? Because this is where the spiritual world is. Or at least that's what they kept telling me when I got here. I had a lot of trouble with this. It says, in our 12 and 12, it tells us that we continue to look at our assets and liabilities. A real desire to learn how to grow by these means are necessities for us. For the wise have always known that no one can make much of his life until self-searching becomes a regular habit. Until he is able to admit and accept what he finds. Until he patiently and persistently tries to correct what is wrong. I have an amends to make to this group. Last week I mentioned a woman by the name of Marion Shea. And I said she had 45 years. There I am, maximizing something. She has 38. I was on the phone with her today because I know I have this habit of the old timers that I know. I give them more time because I want to stay young. No, it's just something that happens. You know, I forget that they've been around a long time, but not that long. So that's an amends to the group because I put it on there and I want to clarify that for the record, as they tell me. And then there's they talk about the hangover, the actual drunk hangover. And it says when a drunk has a hangover, because he drank heavily yesterday, he doesn't live well today. Look at anybody that's come back from a relapse and walks in a room. You know they ain't not looking good when they get here. But there's another kind of hangover, which we all experience. I don't care if you're here for a day. I don't care if you're here for a month. I don't care if you're here for 25 or 50 or 90 years. We all have an emotional hangover at some point in our recovery. It's the emotional hangover. It's a direct result of yesterday and sometimes today's excesses of negative emotions. Anger, fear, jealousy, and the like. I'm angry. I'm fearful. I don't think I'm jealous right now, but I'm wanting. I tell you that right now. That's how I feel. I'm wanting something, and I had an emotional feel-good, and it didn't work out the way I wanted, so I'm wanting. You know, so that and the like. It doesn't say that's the only ones there are. There's a whole lot of them. If we were to live serenely today and tomorrow, we certainly need to eliminate these hangovers. That doesn't mean we need wander morbidly around in the past. It requires an admission and correction of our errors now. The error is I put an expectation on something. And as soon as I put an expectation on something, when I take my inventory today, I'm going to be let down, especially if I put an expectation on a human being, because they always fail us. But how do I learn to let people fail us without being judgmental? We say, don't judge or ye shall be judged, is the biblical saying. There's another line that right after that says, judge the righteous, for they hold the keys to the kingdom. My sponsor says, you better judge. You want to know, you want to be around. So just don't tell them that you're judging them. So I judge today. I just don't condemn. That was a hard thing for me to learn. And I've learned to be considerate of where other people are at. That's hard stuff. Our inventory enables us to settle with the past. When this is done, we are really able to leave it behind. When our inventory is carefully taken, we have made peace with ourselves, and the convention follows that tomorrow's challenges can be met as they come. And then there's that spiritual axiom that they talk about, which I have a lot of problem with, because I don't believe that... it's a spiritual axiom that says whenever we're disturbed, no matter who's to blame, we play a part in it. There are certain things in my life I really don't play a part in it, but I can see that I can make my behaviors inappropriate. And that's the part I'll play. It's not that certain things have happened to me. Whenever we're disturbed, there's something wrong with us. What's wrong with us? I am not accepting somebody where they're at. I want something different out of it. I want somebody to behave in a way that I didn't even tell them. And what that means is I'm taking my insides and judging it by someone else's outside. And I don't have that right. No one in here has that right. You know, my sponsor used to say, what you think of you is none of your business. What does that mean? He says, what other people think of you, none of your business either. But I want everybody to think a certain way about me, so I dress a certain way, I look a certain way, I try to behave a certain way, so I have a certain aura or look. And it takes a very long time for me to get over that it doesn't matter what any of you think of me. It's about my relationship with God. And how do I get to that relationship with God? Because I got to live here, and I got to live there. It's, you know, I got to live in God's world. And it says that we keep our feet firmly on the ground, and we're trying to deal with God at the same time. It's hard stuff, and I don't know how to do that well. Sponsorship is key. I have a sponsor that I still speak to on a very regular basis. We talk about my inventories because I take them and I read them. They laugh. They think it's kind of funny because what I think of me is kind of warped in my perception still. Although I may be doing certain things well, there's a lot of room for growth. And that's what my inventory lets me do. And there's all kinds of inventories, you know. I hear people say, well, I did one 4-step and I never have to do another one. I do a 10-step now. Or I hear people say, I go away annually. There's all kinds of inventory. I don't get hung up on it. If it's a 4-step or a 10-step, it says the habit of inventory taking is very important to us. So I'm in the habit of taking inventory. Sometimes they work out a lot better than I wanted to. But more important than the inventory is a word that I didn't like when I got here and I still struggle with, and that's called restraint from pen and tongue. There's a whole part in the 12 and 12 that talks about it. When I'm judging someone else or I'm passing judgment on someone else or I'm telling somebody how I'm trying to help somebody when I'm really doing is pulling them down so I look good and they, you know, look at me kind of thing and look how good I'm doing and look how bad they're doing. That's a tough inventory. And I got to get honest with that. You know, and when I do that, I don't feel good the next day. So I got to look at that stuff. And it says, quick inventory aimed at our daily ups and downs, especially when people or new events throw off balance and tempt us to make mistakes. I didn't want to come here today. I sat most of the day and trying to just get centered and pray. I was just off balance in my mind. That's the problem, in my mind. See, in God's world, I'm fine. In my world, I'm not. Because I'm, you know, here I am with that, me looking at me and not measuring up to what I think I should measure up to. That's an insane thought going through my head. And I'm going to focus on it all day so I can make it make sense to me. And it makes me sicker and sicker and sicker. So I needed the help of my sponsor. My sponsor said, you have a commitment. Get there. That was the end of the conversation. Talk to you later. Bump. That was it. That's what sponsors are. They always come up with the right answers. In all times of situation, we need self-restraint, honest analysis of what's going on, a willingness to admit when the fault is ours and an equal willingness to forgive when the fault is elsewhere. We need not be discouraged when we fall into the errors of our old ways, for these disciplines are not easy. 10-step is about discipline. I don't like sitting down looking at myself. I'd rather look at you so I don't have to look at me. That's one of those codependent issues. It's much easier to be okay with your feelings than look at my own. You know, it's just one of those things we have. Our first objective is development of self-restraint. It carries a top priority. When we speak or act hastily or rashly, the ability to be fair-minded and tolerant evaporates on the spot. One unkind tirade or one willful snap judgment can ruin a relationship with another person for a whole day or maybe even a whole year. Nothing pays off like restraint from pen and tongue. We must avoid quick-tempered criticism and furious, power-driven argument. The same goes for sulking or silent scorn. These are emotional booby traps baited with pride and vengefulness. I walk around those booby traps and I trip over. It's like a bear walking into a bear trap. And it might go through that mind and I'm stepping in it all the time. And I'm yelling, ouch, why does it hurt? Because I'm not looking at what's really going on. I'm so caught in self, I can't see what's going on outside of me. And that's where my inventory comes in. And that's where my sponsor comes in most of the time. Our first object is to sidestep the traps. When we are tempted, we should train ourselves to step back and think. For we can neither think nor act to good purpose until the habit of self-restraint becomes automatic. One of my favorite statements is, we learn to think to good purpose. You know, they used to tell me the think sign is upside down for a reason when I walked in here. And I used to say, why? He says, George, you're standing on your head. It's right side to you. It's not to us. I didn't get that. And after I stayed here a while, I started to stand on my feet and understand that I wasn't thinking clearly. And it tells me that in the big book, that we don't care what your precise definition of the word may be. We call it plain insanity, the inability of the proportion to think straight. Can't be called anything else. So I wasn't thinking clearly. I wasn't thinking appropriately because I was so caught in self that I didn't know how to let go of it. And that was prayer and meditation and sponsorship and steps. And it tells us when we fail at people, we probably admit it to ourselves always, to them also, and we admit where admission would be helpful. Here's the words that I really didn't like when I got here. Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love are the keystones which we may come into harmony with practically anybody. I like a different word. I like the word consideration. When I'm considerate of you, I'm practicing one of the greatest forms of love I know how. Because if I'm considerate of you, I can't be worrying about me. Because you're more important than I am. Somewhere in our literature, and a little further on, it says, giving rather than getting will become the guiding principle. How do I give to another human being? How do I let me step out of the way in spite of how I feel? That's what I'm doing tonight. That's why I'm here. I don't want to be here. I'll keep saying that because I really don't want to be here, but I know this is where I'm supposed to be. And that's how I get to do my inventory. I'm doing it in front of all of you, which is not something I like doing either. It says, when prideful, angry, jealous, anxious, or fearful, we acted accordingly, and that was that. Here we need to only recognize that we did act badly or think badly. Try to visualize how we might have done better. And resolve with God's help to carry these lessons into tomorrow, making, of course, any amends that we still neglected. There are cases when our ancient enemy, rationalization, there we are, rationalization. I can sit here and rationalize why I feel the way I do. And I was told real early on, feelings aren't facts and thoughts aren't act. I mean, that's all nice cliches, but they're really true. So I can sit here and rationalize everything and why I feel the way I do, but the truth is I feel the way I do because that's how I feel. And it's okay. And I'll embrace that feeling and it'll pass eventually. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, sometimes years later. But it will pass. Been in depression, talks about it. How do I get through the feeling? I get through the feeling by reaching outside of myself and helping another. That's what I was taught to do. And those feelings go away. Because if I'm trying to help somebody, I ain't got time to think about me. So there are cases when an agent of rationalization stepped in to justify conduct that was really wrong. The temptation here is to imagine that we had a good motives and reason when we really hadn't. And then it says when we criticize someone who needed it, our real motive was to win a useless argument. You know, I was told real early on, do I want to be right or do I want to be happy? I used to say, I want to be right. So my sponsor said, stay miserable. Eventually, I don't want to be right anymore. Not that I don't like being right. I'd much rather be happy. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my inventory on my health. Some people in this room know what I've been through health-wise. At a year and a half, I had a moving blood clot, and they moved some veins from my leg. And I was okay for a while, and then at year six, I took a circular saw and cut my hand off. They reattached it. And had a lot of damage done and went through a lot of chronic pain. And year six and a half, I came down with hepatitis C. And then at 3 months after that, I came down with cancer for the second time. That's a physical inventory. That's an actual thing, you know. And I always bring that up because it's important to know that we have a disease that's physical, mental, and spiritual. And it tells us in our literature that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out physically and mentally. I like to say that because the spiritual malady is overcome and I don't want to drink, then my physical body has come back. It hasn't. I've had a breathing problem at year 10. They put me in the hospital, and year 8, I guess it was 8 and a half, year 10, and then year 12. And then again in year 14. I've had four episodes in my breathing, and I'm struggling with my breathing right now, and it's just something I'm going through, something I've been through, and something that I'm going to deal with the rest of my life, however long that may be. If God's ready, I'm ready. I always say that. People get mad when I say that, but I'm really at peace with that. But physically, I am struggling physically. So when I struggle physically, my experience here, and this is an inventory, you know, then I run down mentally. And my answer is still spiritual. Well, today I'm mentally off balance, so I'm hurting more physically than I normally probably would be, because I don't like the weather outside, and I'm not breathing well, and I just don't feel good. And when I don't feel good, and I mentally don't feel good, if I don't get a spiritual solution, then a drink looks good. That's where the inventory comes in. And I don't want to drink. So what do? I call up my sponsor, and they say to me, well, why are you feeling this way? Well, I went to 3 doctors this week. I had a whole lot of tests done. I'm sick and tired of doctors. Well, what's your option? Don't go to them and die? Sponsors are so good when they say things like that, you know? And I understand that, but I don't have to like it. I was told I don't have to like whatever goes on in here, but I have to do it in spite of me. And in spite of me, this thing works. I'm probably at more peace than I've ever been at. I just don't like where I am today. That doesn't mean anything, because I know tomorrow it'll be different. I'll go to sleep, and when I do my inventory later, I'm sure my head will rest well. You know, and in that inventory process, I was looking for something today, and we talk about entering the realm of the spirit, and I'm actually looking for two things at the same time. But one of the things I wanted to do, oh, there it is, in the 10th step, there's a whole bunch of things I came in here with, and I'm going to get them both in if I can. I walked into this 10th step after my 9th step with these feelings and these principles that I was living by. My negative principles. I live by negative and positive principles. They're both principles, and they're both true because they're both my beliefs, and that's all a principle is a belief. So I walked in here feeling wrong. I had liabilities all over the place, financial and otherwise. I felt criticism all over the place. I had excesses and negative emotions and fear and morbid and jealousy and anger. You guys became killjoys because you told me I couldn't drink anymore. I was morbid, and I had sin to me as anything that was selfish in nature. I had hurts and justification. I had a terrible temper when I got here. I had held grudges for a long time. I was miserable. I was envious. I was full of self-pity. I had a lot of hurt pride. I had difficulties. I was disagreeing with everybody in this room. I had demands on everybody. I was rationalizing. I was punishing. I was looking for sympathy. I was judgmental. I ran into tirades. I was looking for attention. I gossiped. I criticized. I was harsh with others. I was hasty. I was power-driven. I was full of depression. I had to go to a doctor for that. I had pride. I was sulking. I was silent, at least scorning everybody. I was loaded with these booby traps that I talked about in my mind that definitely kept me from the sunlight of the spirit. There was material things. I was bored. I was hateful. I looked for big shotism. I had no money in my pocket. I wanted to take everybody out for coffee. We'll figure that out. There was a lot of dislike, and I was indulging myself a lot. You know, and by doing this inventory, I started learning some things about myself, some positive things. Yeah, we talk about walking into this with the negative and how does it become an asset. I learned about admitting myself, what was really going on. I knew how to take a personal inventory promptly, my big word. Promptly doesn't mean 3 weeks from tonight, it means now. I had a lot of problems with that. Now promptly may mean a day to me. I became practical. I learned emotional balance. No matter what's going on, I've learned some emotional balance. Even though today I may be a little bit off, I'm still pretty well emotionally balanced. I'm not going to go out and drink, and I'm definitely not putting a gun to my head tonight, so I know that. So that's pretty good for someone like me who came in here the way I was. I learned some assets. I've grown. I've learned acceptance, and I learned how to correct things. I know what immediately means. It doesn't mean next week. I learned conviction and spiritual stuff. I do meditation. I learned about quiet. We're going to talk a lot about quiet time next week because I believe in that a lot. I know how to review, and I became patient, and I self-search. I've learned to be purposeful, and I've learned to prepare. I've learned to be prompt, and I've learned to condition. I learned about desire of God's will for me today. I have a wonderful desire for God's will today. Persistence and peace. And I learned about being timely, and learned about happiness. Happiness is not what I thought it was. Happiness is a byproduct of doing the next right thing. What's the next right thing? Whatever's in front of me. That's as simple as it is. I'm going to feel a lot better when I leave here than I did when I walked in here today. I learned about spiritual truths. And there's only one spiritual truth they told me I needed to know, that I can't drink safely. Anything after that is a plus. I learned about honesty and discipline and tolerance and restraint and being sober and grace, understanding, esteem, good purpose, action, fair mind, and willingness, forgiveness, being objective, thoughtful, self-control, vigilance. 10 steps about vigilance for me. And being helpful, learning what my motives was, and scrutiny, and good living, kindness, harmony, God-conscious, justice, courtesy, and love. And I learned a lot about blessings. And I want to end with a little thing, because it says we entered the realm of the spirit when we get to the 10th step, you know. This is the spiritual growth step. This is official AA literature, in case anybody wants to know. It was written by Joe S. in Kingston, Ontario, in 1957. So I went through my archives a little bit to pull something up that, you know, when I take an inventory, what is AA about now? I call it the metamorphosis right now of the program. I came in here really broken up and unknown, and AA kind of turned me from this caterpillar into this butterfly. I don't think I'm that good. I may be a moth in my case, but there's a transformation. I like to call it the metamorphosis AA, and I like to read this to the group. It says, it cannot be touched. AA is a spirit, is the name of this. Cannot be touched, nor can it be completely understood. It is as wide as the world, yet small enough to fit snugly into the mind and heart of a man. It has brought light where the darkness only dwelt. It has given hope to the helpless and help to those who yearned in despair. It has nourished forgiveness in those who know no pity. It has given strength to the weak and humility to the strong. It has given greatness to the common. It has spurred to the highest goals those who strove for nothing. It brought to the desperate a home. It has transformed sorrow into a weapon of happiness. It has given purpose to the trackless and shelter to the lost. It has taught patience to the hurried and action to the slothful. To the youth, it has given vision. To the aged, promise. To the lonely, compassion. To the restless, rest. To the sick, it has been a doctor. To the dying, it has received a desire to live. To those who have fallen, it has been a helping hand. It has no judgment against the unteachable, nor has it praise for those who learn. To the outcast, it has been a family. To the childless, it has given children. To the ignorant, wisdom. To the wise, tolerance. It has given to all men and women that which is most precious. It has given love for truth, with enough left over to share with each other. Thanks for letting me share.